It's time once again for our winter giveaway. This giveaway is very simple to enter. Be a patron. So the easiest way to enter is go to patreon.com/comicsfunprofit. Become a patron at any level at our Patreon site, and you can do it that way. You can also enter by going to Threadless and buying some merch and tagging us in a photo of you in said merch. So if you like one of our t-shirts or hats or whatever, and you go to comicsfunprofit.threadless.com and find all our merch and like some of it, buy it, wear it. You can either tag us in social with you wearing it, or send us a photo of you wearing it, and you're entered. So those are the two ways. Be a patron and buy merch. And then you get entered in our winter giveaway, which is fun swag giveaways of photos and stickers and signed comics, just like our fall giveaway was. And we had 5 lucky winners win stuff in our fall giveaway. So we're hoping to have as many entrants this time that we can give away that many again. So be a patron, buy merch, enter the winter giveaway.
Aloha, it's Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a special edition of the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. In this episode, I will be interviewing writer Chris Condon. He is here to promote his latest work, Barry Gifford's Night People. Now, this is a 4-part limited series from Oni Press. Now, when this interview comes out, the first issue will be already out in stores. That came out on March 6th. And issue 2 comes out on April 10th. Chris, welcome to the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you very much for having me, Jason. I appreciate it.
No, Chris, thank you very much. And Chris, I have to ask you this. How is the weather on SETI Alpha 5 today?
It is desolate. It is sandy. It is a wasteland. We had exchanged an email, and you noticed my I think you might be the only person who has noticed my location.
Yes, on your Twitter page.
On my Twitter page, which doesn't fit with necessarily what people know of me. You know, people know me as primarily a noir Western writer.
Yes.
And so my location, well, I guess it fits with the Westerns, I suppose. But yeah, that's a Wrath of Khan reference, of course.
Now, how long have you been a Star Trek fan? I mean, we're talking like books. Have you bought books?
Actually, yeah, I have the books. I have the James Blish books, and I've got the old Gold Key Star Trek issues, and I've been buying the most recent, I've been reading Defiant and then the main line Star Trek run.
Yes.
Very much enjoying those. A good friend of mine, Christopher Cantwell, writes Defiant. I've just been a big fan of Star Trek for a very long time. I probably was first introduced to the other sci-fi fan, although I consider Star Wars more fantasy.
Yes.
Sci-fi, mm-hmm. Science, sci-fantasy.
Yes.
Whereas Star Trek is, you know, sci-fi, like,
yes,
traditional sci-fi. So I was probably first introduced to Star Wars when I was a kid, because that was around the time that they were gearing up to do the prequels, but also the special edition. I grew up in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I was around when the first Power of the Force wave of action figures came out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was. What was that, 95, I think, is when they came out. And I was born in 91, so I was pretty young, but it had a very impactful, it was a very impactful thing for me to see the action figures and to get involved with Star Wars. And then my uncle was a big Trekkie.
Uh-huh.
And he said, if you like Star Wars, you got to check this out. And he brought us over to his house and showed us Wrath of Khan. And I remember the earwig going in the ear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As being a very, like, traumatic thing for me.
Yes.
As a kid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was Star Trek has always been something that I've loved, and it started there and then just kind of grew. I knew my I always my uncle was very much a father figure for me growing up. So and I knew that he was into it, so I always kind of gravitated towards it. And you know, I before I got any of the DVDs or anything like that, I would stay up late. It would be on, I think it was where I live, it was on like Channel 11, and I would play a couple episodes at like 11:30 or midnight. So that's how I first watched it, was on television in actual syndication, which is kind of fun because you don't really get to do that so much anymore. But yeah, I love it. I you know I've got the Blu-rays, I've got books, like we said, I got the comics. I love it. I have the Enterprise pizza cutter.
Oh, yes, I have that too. Yes.
I've got so much. Yeah, I just I'm a big fan of Star Trek. So yeah, I don't it's I think that it's not necessarily some I mean, I guess I write comics, so maybe it's expected, but I don't know if it's as expected as you know, people may think that I'm more into, you know, crime fiction
Because,
and westerns, which I am, absolutely. I love that stuff, and I have a big collection of that stuff, but I'm very much into sci-fi and fantasy. It's a big part of my life.
Before I ask you the next Star Trek question, before I start wrapping up Star Trek stuff, have you gotten any of the autographs from the original crew?
No, but I did meet Nichelle Nichols.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I got a fist bump from
Oh,
her.
that's nice.
I unfortunately was, I just never really met. I met Chekhov.
Yes.
That's the other. So I met Chekhov, and I met Nichelle Nichols. So I mean, I've Walter Koenig.
Yes.
So I've met two of them, but it's I just haven't really been around them. It's just, you know, and then, you know, Leonard Nimoy unfortunately passed away before I ever got to meet him. And I think if I remember, there was something with Shatner where I think he was just too much money
Oh,
to
yes.
meet, and I just sort of erred on the side of I think I'm okay. Yeah, my thing with going to conventions and meeting people, which I grew up at conventions, going to conventions and everything. But as I've gotten older, I've kind of gotten, I don't know, like I very much enjoy a comic convention because there's no, because when you meet a celebrity, it's there's a little bit of a disconnect because you really love the characters that they play, not necessarily the people that they are. So there's always that sort of disconnect, and also you kind of get the feeling sometimes with a lot of them that they're just they're for you to sign, and they want you to hurry up and move on. And you know, that's not everybody. I've met some lovely people. The great one of the great American actors, Tony Curtis, who was in Some Like It Hot and a lot of Sweet Smell of Success, a lot of films. I was able to meet him, and he was a lovely, lovely person. You know, I was rattling on all the people he's worked with, Billy Wilder, Marilyn Monroe, and all, you know, all these names throwing them at him. And he was just like, and you met me, so you met them all. And I was like, well, all right, I'm just gonna go pass out real quick. But he was great. Anyway, yeah, I grew up, you know, going to conventions, and so I wish that I had met more of them, but I kind of went to the same conventions over and over again. It was like an annual thing. There was a convention that sort of gone down in esteem in recent years, probably because of the pandemic, but I'm not exactly sure. But it was called Chiller Theater, which was a local channel in the, or it was on a local channel in the 70s, 60s, 70s. There was a character called Zachary, who was called the Cool Ghoul, and he was basically he was just, you know, your he was your horror host. And, you know, you would show films or whatever. And so that was kind of that was the one that I would go to, was Chiller Theater mostly, and I kind of went to a couple of the other ones that were around local. But yeah, the nobody that I couldn't really think of. Arnim Zimmermann, I met.
Oh yes.
So I got to meet Quark.
Yes.
So that's something. So
Yes, it
I
is.
don't know. Are you all in on Star Trek? Do you watch all the series or
Oh,
just
well, okay,
okay.
let's put it this way. I do watch, well, Enterprise, I try to, but I think at
I
that
think
point,
that's the consensus.
but at that point, I think because it was just, they just didn't know what else to do. I think they just used up all the stories already, and it was just, they went to the well too much and it was already dry. And they, Scott Bakula as Archer, I mean, he's a great actor, but it's unfortunate they couldn't do anything with his character.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna say this, recently, like Discovery, I still have issues with Discovery. My wife loves it. I don't, whenever we watch, I don't say anything. I just let her watch because she enjoys it, and that's fine. But yeah, I'm gonna say, so yes, I'm pretty much all in because I'm gonna say, I have to tell you this, the crazy thing is, let's go back to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, because I saw it when it first came out in theaters, and I remember they had, it's not trading cards, but they used to have like these 4x6 cards, and I think they had like maybe about, I think they were sold in like sets of 12 or something, like from the movies, scenes from the movies. But the one I bought was the what it was a nice picture of the original cast. Chris oh shoot, Kirstie Alley was not in the picture as Savick. It was just the original. It was nice. They were just all in there, the nice maroon uniform. They're sitting around, they're standing around Kirk at the around the captain's chair. I bought that when it, came out. And
Yeah.
then now I'm going to say, I understand when you said William Shatner's price for autograph was a little too high. When he came down for the Amazing Comic-Con about 6 or 7 years ago, I had to have him sign it. I didn't care if it was $90 or anything. It was just, I'm going to get you to sign this,
Yeah.
and it's great.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you have something like that, I think that it's totally worth it. For me, I just sort of felt like, and I've sort of gotten this way in recent years. I'm a collector. I definitely collect things, but I've definitely become more appreciative of just the actual meeting.
Yes.
So that's kind of where I've kind of been skewing more, is just like, as long as I get to meet them, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You
Yes.
know, where I don't necessarily need the autograph and I don't necessarily need
Mm-hmm.
XYZ.
Yeah.
But yeah, with somebody like Shatner, I think that it was like you had to like pay
Yes.
like a fee in order to even get in the running to go, you
Yes,
know.
I
And so that was, you know, I just was like, you know, maybe next time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I don't know if there will be a next time. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yes.
I loved his when he went into space, or at least into Earth
Yes.
orbit.
That was pretty cool.
And had that sort of, you know, he had an epiphany,
Yes.
and everybody else was just drinking champagne and excited, and he was just thinking about our mortality. It was quite an actual Kirk moment, I felt like.
It yes. Yeah, you're right about that. Yes. I'm sorry, Chris. I want to one more question before we start going, because to start talking about night people. Now, if IDW calls and asks you to write a Star Trek miniseries, and I'm going to say this, not with the cast, but let's say with the Klingons, or let's say some, the early days after SETI Alpha, after SETI Alpha 6 exploded, how Khan and his crew survived on the planet. Do you have a story ready if IDW calls you? Or if your friend Chris goes, hey, they're doing either Klingon story or a Khan story. Do they want it a little bit brutal? Are
You
you up
know,
for it?
I don't have a story, but if they asked me, I would say I did. Because I even you just saying that got me thinking, ooh, that would be fun.
Yes.
That would be great. So I definitely think that would be something that and that's something I would love to play in. Just that sort of the brutality of that,
Yes, yeah.
the just the survival of these people. Yeah, I think that would
Yes.
be a really interesting story to tell.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Chris. Okay, listeners, sorry. Okay.
I
We
don't
need to
think you need
start.
to apologize.
We did. I mean, we
I'm
could.
having a great time talking about it.
All
I'm going to talk track too much.
right. All right. So, listeners, I'm just going to go over Chris' amazing work. Everybody knows that, that, of course, that famous text, that, your famous storyline, that Texas Blood and the Enfield Gang Massacre. Now, the Enfield Gang Massacre trade comes out on April 10th. Chris, feel free to talk more about it because I know there is something else in that trade as well.
So the Enfield Game Massacre is a true Western. It is the way that we designed it was that it was three panel pages and splash pages, so it very much accentuated the sort of the Vista Vision sort of
Okay, yes.
Technicolor Western feel, while keeping it very much in line with how we do that Texas Blood. So it's very much centered around character. But it is very much action packed. There's a lot of action. It's right there in the title, the Enfield Gang Massacre. You know, it's going to be bloody and gruesome and action packed. And so yeah. So when we were putting together the trade, we don't typically in our trade collections we don't typically include back matter. We decided to include the story back matter from the single issues because we felt like it was integral to the story. So we kept that. But we wanted to have something that incentivized people to pick up the trade, but also we wanted to celebrate these characters and give people a little bit more because it's a pretty hard-hitting miniseries emotionally. So we figured we put a little cherry on it and hopefully take away the bitterness of it. And that's where the sixth issue or sixth page story came in. Which was just we talked about wanting to do just a little something. And so this is a story set in 1868, and it's a train heist with the Enfield gang. So Jacob got to draw his train, and I
Nice.
got to write a fun little short where we get to see our characters spoiler alert, I guess, live for another adventure. And so I hope that if people enjoyed it, that they will, reach out and hopefully people might want more and, we'll be happy to give it to them at a later date. It was just a matter of time because, it is very difficult to do multiple comics all at once because it's just so time intensive. It's a little easier for a writer. But even then, it's pretty difficult. I have multiple jobs that I'm juggling right now. I can do it, but it's a lot, and it's just because you need to, if you want things to be good, you have to devote the time to it. But yeah, so we're really excited for this trade, and today, the when we're speaking, I know there's not when this is coming out, but on the day that we are speaking, not to date it, but this is FOC, so I really hope people are actually going to pick it up, because I am very excited to see it, because it's not just the six page story that we've added to it. Jacob's also designed the hell out of this. It's really nice. It's a beautiful looking book, and I can't wait to see it in person. I've only seen the digital copies of it, just to approve it for print. But yeah, it's going to be a very beautiful book, and I can't wait to put it on the shelf next to Texas Blood.
Thank you very much. Also, I just want to add a couple more things that you have done that you've also worked on. Hell is a Squared Circle. You also did a short story in Marvel's Crypt of the Shadows. That was in 2022. The short story was called Down Came the Rain. And
later this year, you're going to be working on some EC comics from Oni Press. I
Yes.
know we can't. I don't. I'm not. I don't want to ask you. I'm not going to ask you to. Don't spoil anything. If we have time, I'll ask you, like, did you have fun on that series working on it or anything? So, Chris, would you like to add anything else? Did I miss anything that you want listeners to check out?
No, I think that that's pretty much everything at the moment. There's some stuff coming down the line that I can't really talk about yet, so I'm sort of limited as to what I can talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But I very much hope people pick up the Enfield Game Masker. We were on sort of a, just to help prop us up a little bit, but we were on a number of best of the year lists with the Enfield Game Masker. We were on from the Hollywood Reporter, Comics
Good,
Beat,
yeah,
Comic
yes.
Journal, CBR, so it really wound up being a favorite of a lot of people, which was, it's always a surprise to me because at the end of the day, I'm very much writing it for us, just me and Jake. And I assume, I hope our ride or die readers will be with us, and they were. But we also got a lot of new people on board as well. And that also helped point them to that Texas blood. So I hope more people come on board with this trade. And yeah, it's just, I hope people pick that up. And I do have another, I have a short story in Project Blue Book 1947, the James Tynan
Yes.
series. So I have in April, Jake and I have a story in that. And it's actually I'm from New Jersey.
Yes.
And that this is the first thing that I've written that actually takes place in my home state. So,
Nice.
and it's something that's very personal because it's sort of about a thing that I, experienced growing up. But it was the thing is to call them, they're true weird stories. So they're real weird experiences, whether that's ghosts, aliens, or Sasquatch,
Nice.
whatever you name it, that's what it is. So I chose to write about a place in New Jersey called Clinton Road, which is some people say is the most haunted road in the United States. So,
Oh, that sounds so good.
well, I
All
hope you
right.
like it.
Yes. All right. Now, before we can begin the interview, I want to give a big shout out to Hannah Behedry of Superfan Promotions for setting up this interview. And Hannah, thank you very much. And also, thank you very much, Hannah, for sending me an advanced reading copy of Night People. Chris, I'm going to ask, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you to Hannah as well. She's been fantastic in organizing all this with that Texas Blood and Enfield Game Masker. Jake and I we don't have a PR person. We just do kind of all that ourselves. And so coming on to Night People and having a PR person has been invaluable. It's been fantastic. Anything I need, she's there setting up a wonderful conversation like this.
Thank you.
So yeah, it's been really nice.
All right. Listeners, I got some of my
Her and David Hyde, I should say.
Yes,
Her and
that's
David
right.
Hyde.
Yes, they
So
are a great team. Yes.
I should not exclude David Hyde in that. He's been here too, and he's fantastic. So
They are a great team. No, and Hannah is great because I have worked with her, I think, now for the last 2, 3 years. But yeah, Hannah's very good. She's very great. Listeners, I got some of my information from the Comics Beat article. Interview Chris Condon talks Barry Gifford collab. And yes, that is collab. Night People. And that was written by Zach Fuentes. That was dated on February 8th. Please check out that great article. And I also got more information from the AIPT article. Chris Condon introduces us to the Night People. That was written by Chris Copland. That was dated also on February 8th. Now, if you guys get a chance, please check out that great interview because that interview, Chris, I love that. I love that interview because it goes in depth. It goes a little more in depth in your process of adapting this story. And I don't want
yeah.
to as much as I can. I don't want, I'm trying to stay away from it. I'd rather have readers read that art in interview. It's great. And I hopefully this could be like a compliment, you know, like you know, an added piece, an added interview piece to it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now, Chris, where can listeners follow you on social media?
I am on Twitter and Blue Sky, and I am at Christoph Condon. So it's Christopher without the ER, Christoph Condon. And then I'm also on Patreon with Jacob Phillips. We have a shared Patreon account. It's patreon.com/CondonPhillips.
Okay.
That's where you can find me.
I'm just gonna just off the cuff question your Patreon. What do you have on your Patreon? Do you want to? Yeah, feel free to promote your Patreon, but like, what do you have
Sure.
on there?
Yeah, so I do a podcast every month called Cognitive Absolution. I talk to creators, everybody from Sam Hamm, who wrote the original Batman and the
Yes.
most recent Batman 89
Yes.
series, to Zach Thompson and Sean Phillips, and you know, so lots of folks. So there, I have a podcast. We send out postcards every month, or at least we try. Sometimes we get a little busy, and then we have to apologize. I send letters out to people every month. I write a letter, snail mail, send it out. And newsletters every month, and just updates and sneak peeks at what we're doing. And so we'll often post a cover or an announcement before anybody else hears it, and also behind the scenes stuff. So you were talking about in terms of process, in terms of adaptation. I did already post some stuff about how I, you know, what my book looked like, you know, and kind of how I broke things down and all that. So I broke down my notes and how I did it and all that. So.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Now, let's just jump right in. So, Night People. Now, listeners, this is a 200-page novel. Now it came out on January 18th, 1994. So basically this year is we're celebrating its 30th anniversary. Listeners, if you are interested in checking out the book, I also encourage you to please check out the comic as well too. You can pick up the book on Amazon, or you can ask your local bookstore to order a copy of this book. When I was looking through the Amazon reader's review, I love what one reader reviewer, and his name, I'm going to try to pronounce it, George Avidano, he said it's, and he said, you know, Night, the Barry Gifford's book, Night People, quote, "It's like reading a Tarantino movie." I love it. And I think, yeah, I just love that. And also too, now the comic book, now Jed McKay, the current Avengers writer, he read the first issue. He gave the first issue high praise. I'm just going to read part of his quote. He said, it's a grimy, weird, and paced like a rocket sled issue. So I agree with that, you know.
Yeah, it was very kind of him to do that. I'm really lucky that Jed was on board with it. I didn't reach out to Jed actually about it. He said that he loved the he thought it sounded great from the announcement, and wanted to read the book actually before he ever read our comic.
Yes.
I actually bought the book and read it, and I actually got a message from him, and he said, I need to know how the hell you're going to adapt this." He's like, "Can you send me the first issue?" So I sent him the first issue, which is the only completed issue at this point. Everything's pretty much done on two, but I haven't gotten the official final PDF. But the first issue I sent out to him and just said, "This is the first one, you know, it's," and just kind of explained briefly that, you know, I really wanted to just have a faithful adaptation, because I think that my favorite adaptations tend to be those that really, especially of an author with a distinct voice like Barry Gifford. I think that it serves you well to stay close to what they were doing, and to not deviate too much. And so that's what I did. And so I just explained that to him, and he went away for a week or so or whatever, and didn't hear from him. And then he posted that tweet, and it was just like, wow, that's the highest praise, I could imagine, especially somebody like him, with, like you mentioned, he's writing Avengers and
Yes.
Moon Knight, and he
I
did
am.
Doctor Strange, and
Yes.
so he's fantastic. He's been a great ally, I'll say.
That's good. Now I just want to I think I'm gonna try to condense this question. Hopefully I can, because I know in one of the interviews, Hunter Goranson, the president and publisher of Oni Press, contacted you to adapt this book. Can I just ask, like, how did Hunter contact you? Like, email, and did he explain why? Did he say, hey, can you do this? Or I think you'd be a good fit. How did that work?
Yeah, so Hunter and I had known each other from a previous business interaction, when he was at a different company. And we had both liked each other, but nothing ended up coming of that. But we ended up, he ended up reaching back out to me when he took over at Oni Press as president and publisher, and he just said, "Are you able to do a call? I have some things I think you'd be a good fit for." And I said, "Sure," and we did a call, and he brought up, and now I can talk about it. So the two things he brought up were EC and Night People, and he had the rights to neither. But he really wanted to do them, and he was like, "I think I can get the rights." And I was like, "Would you be down to do Night People?" And I was like, "Well, I mean, I honestly ha I hadn't read the book, and I didn't even know that I was a fan of Barry Gifford yet. I had known his work and just didn't know it. Whether it's the Black Lizard Line imprint at doing like Jim Thompson novels and Raymond Chandler novels and Dashiell Hammett novels. If I'm not sure if it's outside of America, but in America, that's, if you go into the crime section and you look at the labels at any bookstore, you're going to see the Black Lizard label. That's Barry Gifford. And obviously, Wild at Heart, Lost Highway, the two David Lynch films that he co-wrote, the Lost Highway was a pseudo adaptation of Night People. Which is really where Hunter kind of came in from this. He wanted to see a faithful adaptation of Night People, and in reading it, he said that, he didn't really necessarily say that it needed to be the most faithful adaptation of all time, but in reading it, I was just like, I think I just need to stick to this. And also, upon reading it, he had sent me the book, and I read it in a day or two, and I just was like, yep. I'm on board. Let's do it. I've never done anything like this before. It's wild. It's crazy. I want to do it. And so yeah. So I was on board from the start. But yeah, it just started with an email and a conversation, and that's how these things go, the most of the time.
Now, listeners, I just want to also point out that Hunter, now correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, because Hunter is a big fan of Barry's work, right?
Yes. Yes. He is a huge fan. And also a friend of Barry. I've now gotten to know Barry a little bit, and he's been a big fan of my work in terms of an adaptation. He's really loved what I've done with Night People, which is, again, high praise. I couldn't imagine what I'd do if he didn't feel that way. Yeah, he's been fantastic. But yeah, Hunter, he's got a relationship with Barry, and he's a huge fan of his work.
That's nice. Off the cuff question, because like you said, you've got to know Barry a little bit more. He liked your work. How did it feel when he said, because correct me if I'm wrong, Barry read the that Texas Blood. If I'm How did it feel when he said, oh, I love that work?
I mean, it always feels amazing when somebody says, it could be It could be somebody on Twitter that I've never heard of before saying it, and it means a lot. But yeah, hearing it from people that you admire is I don't know, it's really special. Because you when you're doing this stuff, you're doing it by yourself, and you're basically in a void, and you're not, I mean, you can believe in it, but whether or not it's actually gonna find an audience or whether or not it's actually good is another thing. And to not only have this stuff come out, which is a feat in itself, finding a publisher and getting it out there, but to have it come out and have people actually respond to it in the way that you hoped they would, or in some cases, in most cases, in my case, exceed that expectation, it's amazing. So yeah, so and when Barry had, he said the nicest things to me on in an email about, after I did one of the interviews I didn't, he just kind of he had been saying from the start that this guy seems like he's kind of the perfect one to adapt to this, and all that. But it was really nice, the note that he sent after this one interview that I did, because it made me feel like I, actually became a member of the club, which was nice. So that's what I'll say about
Now,
that.
thank you very much for sharing that. And I'm going to say it's the perfect segue before I ask you what the story is about, because the first quote, the first line I see in on the first page is, and it's a quote from William Faulkner. Women are impervious to evil. So from that, I'm going to ask, what is issue one about? What or and if you can even talk about the whole series in general, like
Yeah.
what is the story about in general without spoiling anything?
Sure. Yeah, so the book itself is essentially four loosely connected novellas. So there's four sections of the book. There's characters that appear throughout. They all take place in around the same area. They all take place in the American South. But they each tell their own story, which also kind of led into us using different artists for each issue. But the first issue is called Night People. That's the name of the story. It's Night People. So that's the first section. The second section is called Secret Life of Insects and Ballad of Easy Earl. Yeah. So and then the Marble Lesson story, which I can't remember the name of now. Anyway, the first issue is very much, I mean, it kind of establishes the world, which is one thing, which is this late period, last decade of the 20th century,
Yes, that's right, yeah.
the degradation of the American dream, the griminess of the South, and just seeing the toll that this intense century has put on people, especially women. So we're following two ex-convicts who are also lovers, and they are religious zealots of their own making. They are following Miss Jesus, and they are going to kidnap and try to re-educate men in the ways of Miss Jesus, and if they can't, it's off with their heads. That's the setting for issue one of Night People.
Because what it's because you've read my email. I love this first issue. It's pretty wild. And like you said, that there's and I think in the AIPT interview, you mentioned that they're like there's really no central main character. There's a whole bunch of main characters and they interact and their stories kind of touch upon each other. And I love how you seamlessly intertwine these stories. Because when I read the first issue, it's, I'm reading the crime scene, then all of a sudden we jump to a bar where a detective is. But the thing I love about it, there's for some reason, and for me, it's just so seamless. It just flows seamlessly, and I love it. It's great.
Well, you said for some reason, and the reason is that we did our jobs well. I mean, I tried to do that in the script level, but it's very much reinforced when I hand it off to the artist. And for issue one, we had an absolutely phenomenal artist, Brian Level, whose style is absolutely perfect for this first issue. And he's got this sort of gritty 90s underground sort of style to him. And so yeah, so he brings a certain flair to the issue. A certain and he's got a sort he's got a little bit of a cartoony flavor to his and what he does. So it's like this gritty cartoony sort of this weird dichotomy. But anyway, yeah, so that's very much yeah, it's a result of us just thinking, trying to, because I read reread my scripts and try to make sure that everything feels good in terms of page turns and everything feels good. And if just like you want everything to flow well, because if it doesn't, if it feels, stilted, then it's just going to take the reader out of it. And you want people to be into it. And that was the whole reasoning of moving. So the first scene in the comic is actually like the fourth or fifth chapter in the book, and I just moved it up and also kind of amplified it a little bit because you sort of hear somebody talking about it, but it's not necessarily done in the way that we do it in the comic. So I just put us in there and had it be the scene. I knew that we needed a good kind of cold open to get people interested, and yeah, so that's all that it really was just kind of thinking about what, would make things flow well and how, just in terms of adaptation, like how do you bring this thing that's this book in this larger book that's 60 or 70 pages, how do you boil that down to 30 sequential pages? And so it's you have a lot of one page scenes. And yeah, so that's kind of how you have to work it, which is, it's definitely stretching some muscles that I've never had to stretch before. And same thing for Brian, I would think. And I really can't stress how amazing his work was and how great of a collaborator he was too. I might have mentioned this in one of the other interviews, but he right from the start, he asked if he could call me. Because he wanted to meet me and sort of ask like how I think about collaboration and all that to make sure, probably to make sure I wasn't a psychopath, but also just to see because I'm pretty descriptive in my scripts. I include camera angles and all that kind of stuff. Because I like to my thinking behind that isn't that I'm trying to dictate what people do. What I'm trying to do is give. Set the mood, set the imagery, set the place, get them in the mood in the right headspace, and then they can draw it. That's my intention. It's not to dictate, oh, this has to be here, this has to be here, this has to be here. And so that was the really great thing about that phone call was me explaining to him, yeah, I'm not, that's black and white. You take it to the next level. You're bringing it to life. Do what you got to do. And I mean, he drew what I wrote, but also amplified it and added so much spice and flavor to it that it's really very much a true collaboration.
There's one scene, excuse me. I love the scene, and because you let it breathe, because that scene breathed a little bit where Betty and Cutie, they have they kidnap Rollo, the lawyer. They have him in like this an abandoned house, and they start talking about their Bible that they created, the Book of Becoming. And I love how Cutie is basically reading from it. But I love the scene where Brian has it where you see up close Cutie's eyes, and it's like you could see and I don't have the quote from it. But you could tell in that scene where they're trying to like sort of, and correct me, like sort of try to re-educate men, but in that scene you could see how much hurt that men have done in her lives.
Well, and that's the thing that I unfortunately had to cut from the comic because there's great, I mean, it's really hard-hitting stuff, it's very harrowing to read, but it they both have great backstories in the book. And I would have loved to have kept them. But in writing a comic, you have to have, you have to like figure out, and especially in terms of adaptation, you have to figure out where your real through line story is. And there's only so many deviations that you can make, especially in 30 pages. So I figured that as important as that is to the characters, I feel like we could get that across in who they are and what they're doing and all that. And I do think that we did, and I think that you just sort of hit the nail on the head there. But yeah, that's very much that's Brian taking the written word and bringing it to the next level again.
Because like I said, that was a great panel. That really was. So yes. I'm gonna slowly start wrapping things up. Do you want to give shout outs to your other, we already talked about Brian in the first issue. You want to give shout outs to the other artist that's going to be working on the remaining of the series.
Yeah, so I may be butchering names. I've never heard them said aloud.
Don't worry,
but on issue two, we have Alexander Tafenghi coming on board to do the second issue. He's done a fantastic job. Big fan of his work from The Good Asian, obviously. And really brought that sort of that style and that ethos to issue two, which is maybe the hardest issue to have written. It just it's goes into some pretty dark stuff. And so I'm really glad with how that came out. And I'm very excited to actually see that in print and also to hear what people think about it. But on issue three, we have Artyom Topolin, who is fantastic and is doing an amazing job. On every single, the pages are still coming in, but it's doing an absolutely amazing job. I'm so excited about that one. That one may be my favorite issue, because Easy Earl is also my favorite character from the book, and this issue is focused on Easy Earl. The title of it is The Ballad of Easy Earl, and the final issue, which is called The Crime of Marble Lesson, that one is drawn by Marco Finnegan, who is also doing a great job. And he's been posting some stuff on Twitter that he's been working on, and with some sort of inspirations and things like that. And so definitely follow all those guys on social media if you can. So they've been posting stuff here and there about what they've been doing. And I really just I've again, it's just been fantastic working with all of them. And just I'm just lucky to be able to, get the artwork into my inbox, and just enjoy it from that sort of perspective. I love getting, working with new artists and seeing how they interpret my stuff. And I know that some writers say that they change how they write for certain artists. I don't think I do that, but I kind of like that I don't do that because I also like to just see what works here and what works here and what works, and if I can get if the stuff that I write works with many artists in the same way that I write it for everybody, I think that says something to me about, okay, what I'm writing works, because it's like a universal thing. I can just sort of just take it to whomever and not have to worry about, oh, this person doesn't do this or they don't do this or whatever. I think that the way that I've written is, yeah, it's good for me to know that it's something that's it for some reason the way that I write and at least speaks to people on a certain level, and I'm like, okay,
Yes.
good. But yeah, they've been fantastic, and I'm really thrilled with them. And Rhonda Patterson, who's doing colors on all four
Yes.
issues, and Sean
Okay.
Lee, who's also doing the letters on all four issues. And we have great cover artists for every single issue. My creator, my co-creator of That Texas Blood and Enfield Game Massacre, my creative partner in crime, Jacob Phillips, is doing covers for all four.
Nice.
My favorite of his is issue four. So I'm really excited for that to drop when it does. I think it would be dropping this month, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, we got a whole bunch of great artists on board for those covers. Jason Sean Alexander,
Yes.
Danny, we got J.H. Williams. And J.H. Williams also did a great cover for the EC stories, which I'm very excited about. So I'm just really lucky to be here and lucky to be doing the stuff I do, and to have people want to read it and have publishers want to publish me. So I'm really fortunate to be in the position that I'm in.
I'm gonna slowly start wrapping things up. What was the most fun or exciting thing that you loved working on this series?
Just the challenge of adapting a book. I've never done that before. It was such a fun, challenging thing to do. It really felt like, if you remember being a kid and getting a puzzle, just how am I going to do this? Well, you got to start at the beginning, right? But it's trying to figure out how I do it, and is it going to be good enough, and try to figure out what's the key here. Have to boil things down in terms of, what is this actually about? What is this character about? Which character here is actually my lead? And things like that. So there was a lot of that sort of stuff, the hard work of it. But I found it really thrilling to do. I didn't ever think I'd be doing an adaptation like that.
Yes.
And it was just, it also, and it just proved to me that I could do it, and that's another part of it. So I got not just another book on to add to add to the roster. I also now have this skill unlocked. So it's been a great experience, and I've loved working with Oni. I've been singing their praises. I know that they've kind of come a long way in recent years. I know that they kind of had some issues, and that was actually one of the first things Hunter actually brought up to me. I didn't bring up to him. He brought up to me, and he just said, "I hope that you can kind of see past that and see what I'm trying to do here." And I did. Luckily, we had a relationship where I already trusted him. But yeah, I believed in the vision that he had for Oni, and that
Yes.
vision is coming to fruition now.
Yes.
Really. With Cemetery Kids Don't Die, the Zach Thompson book, and Night People, and the EC relaunch, which I know was something Hunter really wanted to do, and I wanted to do. Every time we talk, he would go, "Oh, I'm a little bit closer to getting the rights," and I'd go, "Just remember me when it happens." And he did. He came through, and I have a bunch of stories that are going to be across the line, and I'm really excited to be doing it. It's a thrill, because I love EC Comics. I love that style of storytelling. I love the tale of comeuppance. I love, I love that type of thing. I think that it's so such a just a meaty genre, and I love the style, the EC style. So to actually be there, and it's obviously a different thing. It's its own thing now, and that's the other thing that I really love about what Hunter's doing with EC. Well, Hunter and Sierra Hahn are doing EC, I should say. But what they're doing is, it's not, because I think the fear among fans is that, oh, it's just, they're just doing it for, they're trying to drain nostalgia and it's just a rehash, blah, 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 blah. But I really don't think that's true. Because A, I'm on board. And I'm a fan. You know, I'm a fan. I'm not just somebody who's trying to make money off of this. Whatever. You know, it's, and everybody that's doing this is the same exact way. We're all fans. And also, if it was, if they were just trying to cash in on nostalgia, they would have gone with titles like Tales from the Crypt,
Yeah, that's
Weird
fine.
Science. They would have gone Vault of Horror. But instead, they've created all new titles.
Yes.
And so that should just speak right there to what they're trying to do. This isn't it, what I said on Twitter, and I'll just rehash that. But it's a relaunch and it's a resurrection. You know,
Yes.
it's not a rehash. It's not, you know, and that's something that I'm really proud of to be a part of, because it's a dream come true. It really is just a dream come true. I mean, you know, who would have thought, you know, who gets to, you know, when you get into comics, obviously you like to write, you know, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man,
Yes.
whatever. But you don't necessarily think that you'll get to write a essentially a dead line. And EC is back. The logo is back. The style is back. What are the chances? You know, I never thought that, you know, coming into comics that I'd ever be writing an EC comic, but here I am. So it's quite a thrill to know that I'll be, hopefully I'll be doing stuff that is, you know, it pays enough homage to the work of people like Johnny Craig and Al Feldstein and all those amazing guys who are at EC creating. So I just really, really hope that I don't do them a disservice in terms of what we're doing. But yeah, it's very much it's EC for the 21st century. It's
Yes.
not a rehash is like my thing, but I'm really excited about it.
Oh, that's good. I know one of the, I think one of the titles I saw was Cruel Universe. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah,
So,
that one's gonna be fun.
okay. So I'm sorry, Chris. Are you okay for 5 more minutes? I just
Yeah,
got,
five more
or,
minutes. That's fine.
okay. So, what is your next convention? What's your next convention appearance in the upcoming months?
I'm doing a small expo in South Jersey, in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And then I'm not doing any conventions really.
Okay.
The only one I'm going to be doing is New York Comic Con.
Ah, okay.
I sort of have, it's just, it cuts into my time, and also just wind up, I find that, you know, 'cause you have to pay to table, and you know, and so you have to make a certain amount back. And I love buying other people's stuff.
Yes.
So I tend to be losing money at convention. So I'm not doing too many conventions this year. I'm hoping that in coming years I'll be invited
Yes. Oh, yeah.
to which I will do those. But yeah, I'm just planning on doing New York Comic Con this year. So in October I'll be at New York Comic Con.
Okay. Have you and your family been to Hawaii?
I have not. I've always wanted to go to Hawaii. My
Okay.
mom went to Hawaii in the 70s, in which she had her rare ghost sighting.
Okay,
Yeah.
I want to hear about
And she saw a
okay, I'm
ghost.
sorry. Now we're going to stretch it a little bit. I want to hear about this story now.
Well, it wasn't, it, she didn't see anything. So what happened was everybody was gone from the hotel room, and she heard somebody in her hotel room rummaging, walking around rummaging, and I called out to the friends who were supposed to be staying with her, and they didn't say anything back, and she went out into the room, and everything, the door was locked and everything, so there was no way that anybody could get in, and there was no reason for why the sound should have been there. And so that was the thing that she always kind of told us about, me and my brother growing up, was about the ghost story in on Hawaii. So, which was, she was always good for that. We couldn't watch, you know, rated R movies or anything growing up, me and my brother. until we were a little bit more of age, and then she
Yeah.
would introduce us. But she would tell us things and stories, and when she had a story like that, or if we had a family member who had a similar type of story, it was very thrilling. Which I think sort of informs my desire to tell stories as well. But yeah, that's the one thing that I remember about her trip to Hawaii was about the ghost story in the hotel room. But yeah, I would love to go. It looks so beautiful, and I'm really, hopefully one day, hopefully soon, I'd love to. Do you all have a convention in Hawaii?
I was going to mention that to you. Now, let me make this clear. I always make this clear. I do not know any of the organizers. We do have on Oahu, where I live, we have two main conventions. One is the Amazing Comic Con, and the other one is the Comic Con Honolulu. So, yeah, so we do have that. We have a comic book convention on Maui. And then there is a one-day comic book convention on Kauai. I don't know if the Big Island restarted their convention, but I heard it's a very good convention. They bring down a lot of writers. But yes, we do have conventions out here. Yes.
Well, I have to come out. If I that I would go for.
So if any
That
of
I would go for.
so if any Amazing Comic Con or Comic Con Honolulu, if you guys are listening, Chris, please invite Chris.
Please.
All right, last question. Any closing words to our listeners?
Thank you for supporting me, and I hope you continue to support me. And if you haven't read anything I've written yet, please do dive in. The water's warm. It's I try to write characters that people can relate to. I try to write
Yes.
stories that people can relate to. And I think that's what people walk away from reading my stuff with, is a sense of empathy and sympathy, and hopefully they had a little bit of fun on the journey as well.
Chris, mahalo. That's thank you in Hawaiian. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to interview. I'm sorry the interview went, I told you it was only going to be, supposed to be an hour. I'm sorry we're running a little late. I want to wish you all the success with Night People, actually with this whole mini series. I can't wait to read the rest of the issues. I cannot wait. I also want to thank Hannah of Superfan Promotion for setting up this interview and providing me with an advanced reading copy. If you are a new comic book reader or a lifelong comic book reader who loves very dark and gritty stories, please check out Barry Gifford's Night People from Oni Press. The first issue is out in stores right now when this interview drops, and also the second issue comes out on April 10th. I love the first issue of Night People. Chris, I'm being serious. This is one of those comics that you have to take the time to read and savor each moment. I'm being honest on this. There are a lot of things, there are a lot of moving parts in this first issue, and Chris did an amazing job intertwining all these character stories seamlessly together. And I also want to thank Drew, the co-host of Comics for Fun and Profit, for putting this episode together. Drew, thank you very much for all your hard work behind the scenes. If you are a new listener, please check out new episodes of Comics for Fun and Profit that comes out every Saturday. And I want to thank you, the listeners. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to this episode. Until next time, guys. Aloha.
As you know, RLCS is Cowabunga Comics, Lake Country, Wisconsin's best pop culture destination for new comics, back issues, gaming, retro video games, vinyl, and figures. Give them a call, 262-569-9999. Check them out online at cowabungacomics.com or follow them on Twitter. at Incredical. They are our LCS, and we utilize their deep discount mail order service to bring Oconomowoc, Wisconsin closer to us. They'll take care of you. Tell them Drew and Kyle sent you. Say hi to Eric and James from us. If you need an LCS, you can't go wrong with Cowabunga Comics.